Good morning, everybody. I hope that song gets you pumped up as much as it does for me. I love hearing that in the morning. Good morning, AC. Good morning there, Bob Van Kirk. Good morning, Jacob. How are you guys doing this morning?
Hey, what's going on, Coleman? Happy to be here, man.
Excellent. I'm happy to have you on here on the stage, AC. So I want to thank everybody for joining. This is going to be episode 12 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. And today's episode, I thought I'd do something a little bit different than what we've done for the last couple of episodes. And there was a clip that we're going to play a little later on today from CNBC, where they were talking about an alarming number of retiree and millennials who are really concerned about retirement. And I thought it'd be a really good opportunity for us to jump on and have the panel discuss and create an episode for the people that are just kind of on the edge. They're just kind of, they're waking up, they're seeing what's going on, they're seeing things really starting to get hard to reach, retirement, buying a home, paying for vehicles, university. So I wanted to kind of just bring up some talking points on what would be a good thing that we could use to get them to come, find the orange pill, and get them to be able to see and have financial freedom. So I have a lot of talking points I want to cover today. And I'm going to ask everybody that's up here, all the speakers and everybody in the audience, if you have anything that you want to contribute to the show, we want to make this so that we can just kind of point people to this specific episode and just kind of show them, hey, listen to this. This is going to answer a lot of the questions you guys have. But before we begin, I want to make sure everybody understands the mission of this space. And it's just the purpose is to defend the values that our nations were founded upon. We champion decentralized, trustless systems that empower individuals and communities and eliminate any central authority so we can advance our cause for a free and open society. We accomplish our mission by utilizing the power of Bitcoin to promote a world where every individual has the undeniable right to control their own destiny, their own assets, and their own privacy. We do not support tyranny in any of its forms, and together we will continue our oaths to safeguard the ideals that define us. We are veterans, we are Bitcoiners, and most importantly, we are for freedom. Hoorah. Sorry about that. But I want to, I see a couple people in the audience. I see Wade. Good morning, Wade. I know it's really early for you. Lindsay Koss, I see you out there. Good morning. And Punchplate, how are you doing today? Oh, and Terrence, there you are. I see you just pop up. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, Coleman. What's the good news today?
We're no longer at 58K, if that makes you happy.
Good morning.
Yeah, so we had a little bit of dip in the price. So we're no longer the 58K gang, but the day's still pretty early, so there should be plenty of opportunity to get on board with that. Really quick, one thing I forgot to mention. If you are a veteran out there and you're looking for answers, please make sure you send us a direct message, and we'll get you connected with our extended community. We have over 600 vets in our organization and we're growing. So please make sure to reach out to us.
Coleman, how long do you have to have been in Bitcoin to be a Bitcoin veteran? Because I've been here since 2017. So am I a Bitcoin veteran?
You are an honorary Bitcoin veteran. The veteran status applies to military service, sir. Well, just to kind of get things rolling here, again, in case you joined late, today's spaces is going to be more of just discussion, and it's going to be how we can start bringing people on and giving them hope in the current financial situation. So, Jacob, if you could go ahead and start firing up or get loading up that video from CNBC. I'm not sure if you all saw it, but they had someone from the retirement board come on and speak. And they're just throwing out some alarming statistics about how people feel about their retirement. And so I want to listen to that video first. And then as soon as we listen to it, I want to kind of just take out some of the talking points and hear everybody's discussion on it and what they what they think or they believe what we can do to help people change their mindset on this and set them up for their glory days. You got that video, Jacob?
In fact, after yesterday's sell-off, a lot of investors may be even more concerned about being behind with their retirement savings. A new CNBC SurveyMonkey poll found that about 7 out of 10 workers are concerned about being able to fully retire. CNBC's senior personal finance correspondent Sharon Epperson is here with us right now to break it all down. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning, Becky. You know, market volatility may explain some of the concerns of many Americans. This survey of more than 6,600 adults, including about 2,600 retirees and 4,000 adults working full-time or part-time in early August, found a number of findings about how people feel about their retirement. The majority acknowledged that reaching retirement may not happen like it did for their parents. 8 out of 10 workers, 82%, say achieving a comfortable retirement is much harder or somewhat harder to achieve. But looking at their own futures, the CNBC poll found 44% say they are cautiously optimistic about their ability to meet their retirement goal. 27% are realistic about that happening. 21%, though, are doubtful, and 9% say they believe it's never going to happen. With a decline in traditional pensions, rising health care costs, and people living longer, many experts that we spoke to say rethinking retirement is the new reality, and it may mean working at least part-time in your later years. The CNBC poll found most workers, 69%, are concerned about being able to afford to stop working or retire fully. The highest percentage of concern was among millennials and Gen Xers. And even among retirees, more than a quarter, 28%, say they are currently working to supplement their retirement funds, either because they want to or they have to. Joe Coughlin, who heads the Age Lab at MIT, tells me that retirement itself is being retired. He says often within a year or two, retirees find out that they're either needing more money or they need to do something, and so they go back to work in some capacity. You can read a lot more about the key findings in the CNBC Your Money Retirement Survey on CNBC.com.
So there's definitely a lot to unpack with that short little video. But some of the main things I pulled away from that were 7 out of 10 workers are concerned about being able to retire. And that's just an alarming high number of people being able to that are concerned about that. Majority of people believe that reaching retirement may not happen like it did for their parents in the same capacity. Many part-time workers, or many are figuring out that they're going to have to continue to do working while they're in retirement to supplement their income. And most people realize this 1 to 2 years into retirement. So I'd like to get the panel's thoughts on this. We obviously all know the solution and the answer to getting around this, but I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts on that video.
Yeah, it seems you, Wade?
Go ahead, Terrence.
I was just going to say, it seems to me a lot of it is due to varying accretion rates, right? Because, you know, with inflation and the cost of goods, the cost of living, the cost of everything going up often exceeds what wage earners, or at least, you know, middle to sometimes lower class can save in. And they're often having to take risks, or if they don't want to take risks, they're stuck in bonds, right? The 60-40 isn't dead. It's mostly migrated to a 70-30, but we call it a 60-40. So if you think about even 30% conservatively of retirees that are able to save and put some excess money to the side, and it's in a bond that is a guaranteed loss against inflation, because you're earning, you know, 3%, 4%, maybe 5% if you're lucky, depending when you got in. You know, that's not, you know, $100 in 1 year, $105, you know, is not going to buy you more goods or the same amount of goods. By far, it's going to be way less. And so then you're taking risk, of course, on these stocks and investing passively. So yes, you're right, Coleman, we know the answer is Bitcoin, but I think that's the problem. It comes down to accretion rates. And so people that don't know about Bitcoin yet as a way to just passively not have to worry about risk and save long-term, this is going to continue to be a problem, because, you know, you used to be able to just set a number aside, you know, probably pre-1971, before we went off the gold standard, where it was like, okay, how much do I need in retirement? And, you know, what does TradFi and legacy finance say? Well, shave off whatever, 3%, 4%, 5% per year, and my money will keep growing. But the number keeps growing so much that you might say, oh, I need, you know, X million to retire on. And well, now you're going to need, you know, X to the second or third power due to inflation. So, and then it just gets into, I think, another philosophical question of, you know, what is your definition of retirement? And, you know, maybe it makes you think about what you're doing and what your purpose is, what your skill set is. You know, it's like, I don't believe humans really should just stop everything and just go sit on the beach and look at the sky. But maybe a lot of people aren't doing what they want to do. And because of the broken system are having to do things to put food on the table that they wouldn't otherwise do. Okay, that was a lot.
No, that was perfect. And you hit a lot of good points there. Like, you know, when you're starting to talk to your financial planner, if you do that at a young age in your early 20s, which most people don't, they don't do that till their 30s or 40s, that goalpost for retirement, the amount that you need, just keeps getting moved. So it's really unfair. You're planning for something at a young age, and the number just keeps changing on you. So you can't do it accurately. And you're right, the retirement is different for everybody. But I think one of the things we can all agree to is that in your retirement, you shouldn't be worried about, you know, what do I need to cut out to make sure that I can make this last for the next 5, 10, 15 years. But yeah, great points, great points. I want to welcome Bob Van Kirk to the stage, and I want to give a shout out to Lisa Huff. How are you doing?
Hey, good morning. I was just looking again at, you know, based on the clip there, looking again at TradingView and just looking at the stats. You know, if you look at SPY or S&P or NASDAQ 100 versus the dollar, obviously it's done well. So is Bitcoin. But if you look at any one of those indexes versus SATs versus, you know, Bitcoin, it's only headed one way. And so I think the issue is a lot of people are still measuring their net worth in dollars. So their unit of account is dollars, and they need to start looking at it in Bitcoin terms over a long period of time.
Yes, absolutely. Wade, I think you had your hand up first.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite topics to talk about with people regarding Bitcoin. With Social Security, people were forced to save a certain amount of money, and it's funded through theft. It's theft from the people who are on Social Security as well as the people who aren't, because you just have to debase the currency to fund Social Security. So if you have an ever-appreciating asset, let's say Bitcoin only appreciated at 3 to 5% a year, wasn't debased at 7%, still over the course of 40 years, it'll go up so far in value against the dollar, against other against anything, that you can fund your retirement. While you fund your retirement, everything gets cheaper. And the interesting thing about this is it flips everything on its head, whereas you had a minimum wage in today's society, we have a minimum wage of whatever it is, whatever state you're in. Instead of having a minimum wage, wages would actually have to go down because employers have to pay, have less and less Bitcoin to pay their employees, because it's harder and harder to obtain that asset. So people work harder and harder to acquire Bitcoin. So you have people working harder to accumulate less that's valued at more, instead of people working harder to accumulate more, which is worth less. So it flips the entire dynamic on its head. So savings when you're young will have a much greater value when you're old, instead of saving a lot when you're young and not even being able to buy a pack of gum when you're old. So saving in Bitcoin is extremely important for anybody who does ever want to retire. It is the safe haven asset for retirees.
Yes, 100%. We have to make sure that we get that message across. You have to save in something that's hard, something that can't be debased or inflated away. Before we go to you, AC, I just want to invite Joe Calasari up to the stage. Lisa Huff, you're also welcome. And good morning, Shane Hazel. AC, did you have anything to touch on?
Yeah, just building upon what Terrence, Wade, and Bob had already said, the challenge for people outside of Bitcoin and retirement is their kind of misunderstanding of, you know, valuations and taking on risk. And I'll use the example that a lot of folks already use is take a look at your investment portfolio, but instead of denominating it against just USD or whatever fiat currency is in your jurisdiction, but denominating it in something like M2 money supply or global M2 money supply. And when you change the denominator, the graph actually, the chart changes significantly. Instead of moving up into the right, if we use like the Dow Jones or the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, it actually starts to trend mostly horizontal. And so really what that's an indicator of is the fact that actual inflation, not just what the government tells you is CPI, but actual inflation or true inflation or whatever metric you're using is only barely keeping your increase in your investments is just barely keeping up with the cost or the money printing, the dilution of the money supply as more and more money is getting printed. And so I think that's probably one of the biggest things that most people don't realize. They never think to change the denominator. But once they do and they realize that their money is stagnating and isn't growing, is an opportunity for them to look at other avenues. Unfortunately, people outside of Bitcoin tend to take on more risk. You know, like Terrence was saying earlier, that 60-40 split and bonds, you know, they may accrete at 5%. The CPI is telling us it's 3%, so really they're only gaining 2%. But in reality, the actual inflation is much higher. Sometimes over the past couple of years, it could be upwards of like 20%. So they're losing significant purchasing power in the future. And so how do we get people to see that new reality and start to seek out other investment opportunities? And I don't even like the word investment, because investment means that you're taking on more risk. I much prefer Bitcoin as the superior savings technology, because you're not taking on any risk other than, you know, the risk you take on for your own personal self-custody.
No, absolutely, I see. And I think the way you open this door to more people is you just start showing them the numbers and the facts. As we continue with this conversation, I have some really interesting numbers, especially when it applies to home buying and university cost. But I think the way that you just keep knocking on that door and you just keep showing them the numbers, and eventually that they just can't deny it anymore. And I think that's how you start getting more people in. And again, this is my first aha moment before I got into Bitcoin, was I just started noticing that there appeared to be more senior or retirement age people working. And I always thought to myself, I wonder what happened to them. Was it just bad luck? You know, did something change in their financing, you know, major expense? Or do they just really like working? And I noticed this right around 2015, 2017. And then you start diving in and you realize what the real issue is. So this for me is just kind of a big talking point. Lisa, welcome to the stage.
Hey guys. This is such a depressing conversation. I hate talking about old people that are still working, right? Like, I think this is what Bitcoin does for us. If everybody's kids, if, you know, if you've got a baby or you've got a small child and you start a very small account for them in Bitcoin, or if you are, as I met yesterday, somebody that was 66 years old, I was actually, you guys will be proud of me, I was actually sitting down yesterday with a group of veterans at the VA hospital, and kind of the age group was in their mid to late 60s. And I was giving them a little kind of 1-2 on Bitcoin. And it was funny that the thing that resonated the most with them was the aha moment of, wait a minute, this is money that the US government can't control. That like was a complete game changer in the conversation. So yes, they are interested in the retirement aspect, but huge distrust for the government among at least the group of gentlemen that I was speaking with yesterday. Hi, Wade.
Hey, good morning.
So it comes to mind. What comes to mind when you bring that up is it's like when I cashed in my retirement to buy Bitcoin. The fact is that the government doesn't only want to tax you when you do that. They penalize you for taking your own money out of the system that they use to prop up the failing system that I kind of see more of a socialist system, and that, or maybe more communist, the forced participation in the retirement system in order to maintain the value of that retirement system, or the forced participation in Social Security. It's like these things aren't voluntary for a reason. It seems like to me like retirement is more about control and a means that they can commit theft from people who are trying to save for the later years. And Bitcoin just kind of flips that on its head, where you don't need them. You don't really need to participate in their system. You can just save yourself.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You just gave me a great idea. I might do a LinkedIn or something post on that, because I don't think it occurs to you until much later in life, until you're drowning kind of in that system, right? Or you've got the chain around your neck in the Social Security system. It's not something that, although I will say, having a daughter has entered the workforce, it has dawned on her immediately, right? I mean, those are kind of the times in your life that it dawns on you. Your first paycheck you get, you see all this money that's being taken out. And then later in life, you finally, it's like, oh my God, the jig's up. I realize I've been completely robbed. And I saw something yesterday that about the where you'd be, I guess Social Security maxes out at $10,000 a month, your contribution or something. And it was basically, but what if you had just taken that same investment and put it in the stock market? And it was like orders of magnitude higher. Anyway, I'm not quite sure where I'm going with this ramble, but it's a horrible idea, right? And it doesn't work. And now it's just being protected by a political system that's redo our the way that our leadership is set up in this country. You guys need to watch the brand new Eric Weinstein episode on Modern Wisdom if you have not. It's 3.5 hours long, but kind of towards the end, Eric Weinstein goes into the, you know, why he's voting for Bobby Kennedy and why he's going to stick with talking about Bobby Kennedy. And this is like a recent episode, so it's not as though he's not aware that, you know, what the current status is. But he just said, look, like, this isn't a vote. This is a vote against A and B. This is a vote against the current system. Like, we have to break this system. And I don't know, more power to them. We're certainly going down the doomsday route.
And I think you're right, Lisa. I think that a lot of people view it as a doomsday route, but there is an option. We just have to make sure that we're vocal about it, and we just can't stay silent anymore. We need to just make sure that people know there's different options. One of the things that a lot of people can do, I haven't done it myself, just because I don't have a retirement plan. I'm a small business owner. We're in that weird stage where we're not large enough to offer retirement plans. But moving a thrift savings plan into a Bitcoin IRA, I know there's some loopholes. It's a little bit lengthy process, but getting people to do that and the returns on that can literally be life-changing for anybody that does it. When you look at the CAGR, the compounded annual growth rate for Bitcoin over just the last 10 years, it's 61%. There's just nothing that can touch that. It's mind-blowing what that can compound to over years. Even if you start later in life, you start putting money into it at 40 years old, want to retire at 60, 65, that's 25 years, it's going to be, can really help a lot of people out.
Well, but I just want to push back on one thing that you said there. It is not a difficult process to take a traditional retirement account and move it into a Bitcoin denominated retirement account. And I know there are several firms that perhaps can help with that. I personally have used Unchained Capital. And from the time that I did mine at Unchained years ago before I worked there, it was a little bit cumbersome. It is so streamlined today. I mean, it is like easy breezy to make all of that happen. And and then you can hold the keys to your, at least you can hold one key to your retirement account and know that it's denominated in Bitcoin and not some shitcoin ETF lookalike. You know, I'm sort of against the ETFs this week. I don't know. I kind of have a bad taste about the ETFs this week. I'm really concerned that there will be a heist out of the Coinbase custody solution, and then we will all just, you know, the whole world will go, we told you so, this wasn't safe, this is just for criminals.
May I inquire really quickly as to why you think that'll happen?
Well, I think the honeypot has grown so large, and I also believe that, you know, it is not zero probability that there is someone laying in wait who knows how to access Bitcoin inside of any sort of institutional custody, product. I think it's just zero probability that there is not someone who's been buried inside a Coinbase for 10 years or however long they've been in business who knows how to access it. And so at what point does the number get so large that, you know, they compromise their own integrity? And, you know, I'm just saying it's just not a zero probability. And I think it's hilarious, maybe, that this doesn't occur to folks on Wall Street and they just keep piling into one custodial solution or maybe two. And, you know, I mean, I know some of the miners have spread their Bitcoin amongst custodians, but again, you know, and this is totally, I don't work for Unchained, I'm not being paid to endorse Unchained, but I mean, Dhruv Bansal and his separate the keys, not the coins, right? Like that is the way. Like distribute keys if you're an institution and you don't want to hold your keys, right? You could give your keys to three separate custodians so that no one custodian or five different custodians, right? Like M of N. But that way, no one custodian could access your Bitcoin. I just think it's kind of crazy that we're operating in the second dimension when we don't need to anymore.
You know, great points and great view on that. Dallas Rushing, welcome to the stage. We're about to switch topics. Do you have anything you want to hit on the current topic?
Yeah, good to see you guys. Some friendly faces in here. Lisa, how's it going? I don't know, maybe quickly. Sure, I think the general idea Lisa's saying, I certainly seconded that, you know, it's not good to have, you know, all basically custody for institutions and anyone to, you know, wants to be held with like a qualified custodian sort of try to be forced into like a single entity. I think that's not good. Just obviously decentralization, maxi in all the ways that it makes sense. But, you know, obviously Coinbase internally does have, you know, I mean, distributed, you know, keys and multisig and like, it's, you know, pretty elaborate how Coinbase custody is set up internally, which is why I think they've been chosen to be the custodian that holds funds. You know, I guess I just try to play out some of the scenarios like Lisa was mentioning, maybe there's somebody who gets how it works, but it's just like, you know, I don't know. If it's someone internally, it's like that person's probably American. They would know who stole funds. Those funds would have the eye of Sauron like on them forever, and you wouldn't be able to do anything with them. And so, you know, it's like it certainly is a non-zero probability that like somebody could, you know, potentially access or exploit funds from like one of these big custodians. But, you know, it's like, I don't know. In some ways, it's like the longer it's remained, you know, not having large exploits, like the processes do continue to get better. And I think the probability of an exploit does go down. But then the other side is like, well, the incentive to do so goes up because they're holding more funds. And so those two things are sort of at odds with each other. But yeah, I think nonetheless, it's interesting. And I want to see more custodians break into the mix. And, you know, we're a company that like, you know, needs to think about these kind of things and especially in the US, it's crazy how limited your options are, unless you just have like all the licenses yourself, and then even that becomes, you know, more expensive endeavor as we go along, and there's, you know, that's a deeper discussion as to why that becomes more expensive and who may want that to happen. But anyway, yeah, I think just one other point you guys were mentioning earlier, I mean, Bitcoin, you know, has a 60% CAGR. When looking backwards, I mean, at the beginning of this year, Bitcoin was what, 44K, and, you know, 60% on that puts us at about 70. And if you just kind of follow that out each year, you know, I guess obviously returns for Bitcoin will change over time, but, you know, I mean, we'd be at $1 million in like 6 or 7 years from now. So I think that fits a lot of people's models, depending on who you ask and how bullish they are. But yeah, nonetheless, we can switch topics, but appreciate you guys having me.
No, thank you. And I appreciate your points and views on that. And that was a perfect segue for the next topic. I think after retirement, or even before retirement, the next biggest concern is going to be home buying, especially for first-time home buyers. So the average age to buy a home in the United States is 32 years, is what I averaged it out to. 32 years old is the first time you start purchasing a home. And home prices in 2020 were averaging out medium home for $275,000. The medium home in the year 2024 is now $416,000. So roughly about a 51% increase over 4 years. And I like to use numbers to kind of drive home points. So just really quick, I'm just going to run some numbers for you. If you bought your home with the highest price of Bitcoin in the year 2020, which was $29,000 right at the end, November, December of 2020, it would have cost you 9.48 Bitcoin to purchase that $275,000 home. That home in the year 2024, $416,000, because we're at 58K forever, that would cost you 7.17 Bitcoin. So even though the house went up in value, the amount of Bitcoin it cost you went down. If you use the 2020 house price of $275,000 with the average price of Bitcoin in the year 2020, which is right around $11,000, it would have cost you 25 Bitcoin to buy that house. So it's a huge difference in the amount of Bitcoin that it cost you to buy that house. And so I started trying to figure out how much Bitcoin do people have to start saving. And I'm going to ramble just for a little bit longer on this. How much Bitcoin people would have to start saving to start putting Bitcoin down as an option. And I know 60% CAGR is a high number, so I halved it. And I said, let's just say that someone starts at the age of 17. Did I just mute myself? Sorry about that. So let's say that at the age 17, when someone starts working, they start saving for 15 years with a CAGR of 30%. At $10 per week, they would accumulate 0.0381, assuming that Bitcoin rises 30% per year, or they'd have $113,000 in Bitcoin. If they were to invest $100 every 2 weeks of their paycheck for 15 years, still with the same 30% increase in Bitcoin's price, they'd have 0.195 Bitcoin, or $500,000 worth of Bitcoin. And it's just crazy the amount of money that you would have to, it's not crazy the amount of money that you'd have to put aside in Bitcoin to go ahead and start purchasing these homes. So I'd like to get everyone's thoughts on how you explain to people that the purchasing price of Bitcoin increases, but the amount of Bitcoin that you need to purchase goes down. I hope I explained that okay.
Well, yeah, the cost of everything goes down against Bitcoin. The cost of labor should go down, the cost of everything across the board. So saving for retirement, on that, rolling back to that other note, if you don't save in Bitcoin and you're being debased at 7% a year, then how do you ever expect to retire? Because how much do you have to save when you're young to be able to retire? Is that just drives the asset costs higher. So, yeah, the cost of everything going down against Bitcoin in the, I don't know, I see it as forever, as long as the population goes up, that's just one third of the formula.
I know AC had a post he put into the Nest, and hopefully you can explain this a little bit more elegantly than I just did. AC, you want to go ahead and take over on that?
Yeah, thanks, Coleman. So I threw a couple things on the nest. I saw that Lisa jumped off, but I did find something similar to what she was talking about related to Social Security and investing that versus contributing it into Social Security for anyone who wants to do a little bit more homework. But as far as housing price goes, I threw two images up in the nest. The first one is from everyone's favorite vegetable, the rational root. This one's a little bit dated. I think it's probably around mid-2023. I was trying to find his actual post, but I couldn't find it. I happened to save this image. But really what this does is it paints the picture of housing price versus household income. And if you look to the far left, you know, back in the mid-80s, the household income times three, so effectively 3 years, would allow you to afford a house. Now, obviously, folks aren't going to contribute their entire household income to a house. So that's going to be extended in something like a 10-year, 20-year, 30-year mortgage. But then as you start to progress forward to the right in time, you start to see that the housing prices go up dramatically while household income wages do not maintain that same path. And again, this kind of relates to the other image that I put up there as far as housing prices versus M2 money supply. And as you can see that the price of the houses, it pretty much tracks with money supply dilution. And so what happens is the inflation causes all assets, not just housing, to go up. Unfortunately for the wage earner and for the household worker, their income isn't maintaining it. So as you can see in 2023, now we're looking at six times the household income to afford a house. And now that's why there's discussions on something crazy like a 40 or a 50-year mortgage, because the average person just cannot afford a house. And so how does this relate to Bitcoin? I think the realization, and again, this is echoing what I said earlier, people don't realize that there's a superior savings technology with Bitcoin that, like you've already talked about, Coleman, that has, you know, between a 20 and a 60% CAGR, depending on your timeline. There is a superior savings technology that allows for more housing affordability. Unfortunately, you know, at 0.01 adoption of Bitcoin globally, the people just don't realize it. And it takes a lot of education from people that are in this space and people joining the space and people in Bitcoin continuing to educate people around them, you know, starting with their small circle of friends and extending that out, that there is something there that allows them to reprice the world outside of the fiat system, and that's Bitcoin.
Yes, absolutely. And I think just showing them numbers, I think, paints that picture. Again, 25 Bitcoin to buy a house, the average house in 2020. And it only takes you 7.17 Bitcoin today to buy a 416. So almost 50% increase in house value, but it still takes less Bitcoin. And just again, I think Wade had mentioned it earlier, just changing that denominator, making it priced in a hard asset, and it can really start opening people's minds. I'd like to hear other people on the panel, your thoughts on home buying.
While people are collecting their thoughts, one more thing I'd like to add, Coleman, is that I think making the leap to Bitcoin could be a leap a little bit too far at this point. I think what we really need to do is inform people of the melting ice cube that they're holding in their savings account. You know, graphics that show the purchasing power of the dollar or the euro or whatever fiat they're holding, and the dilution of that purchasing power diminishing over time is really the picture they need to understand first. And then to seek out, you know, what is an alternative? What is an alternative that doesn't incur additional risk? You know, an alternative of dumping it into NVIDIA or something like that is an option, but you're assuming a ton more risk. Whereas there's something that exists with similar, if not superior, accretion that does not take on risk. And so we've got to connect those dots, help people connect those dots. And that's the first step, is understanding how broken the money system really is.
Would you mind elaborating and sharing what examples you use to help people visualize this?
You know, that's a tough one. In discussions, I always try to meet people where they are. You know, what are they struggling with? Is it because they are they can't afford a house, or they're trying to put food on the table? Every situation is different, and I try to meet people where they are. I think broad general topics like the ones that we're discussing right now, whether that's housing price or where that's retirement, I think a lot of people that's certainly not top of mind depending on where they are in life, but it's something that they definitely think about. And, you know, identifying them with them, you know, what are their pain points? What's going to make the strongest connection to keep them in the conversation, and then force them, or encourage them, I should say, motivate them to do a little bit more homework, I think is the best approach.
Excellent. Does anyone else have anything else they'd like to mention? We're going to end this show a little bit early today. I have a couple things I have to take care of, and I couldn't readjust the time. But before we move to the next topic, does anybody else have anything else they'd like to share?
I'd just like to point everybody at what Tip NZ said last year on Cafe B. It was just kind of blew me away. The, you know, saving for retirement is a right. And when she said that, I kind of took pause. And then she said, not a privilege. It gives us the ability to save for our future.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things... Again, so the topic today was how do you get people to kind of make that bridge? How do you get them to understand what's going on? And I always find the most eye-opening thing is using the example of exponential growth and compounding numbers. And I always steal Jeff Booth's example with the folding a piece of Bible paper. And in case no one's heard of this example before, I'll go over it really, really quick. So let's assume that you can fold a single piece of Bible paper an infinite amount of times. I always ask, how many folds would it take for that piece of paper to reach the sun? And most people answer, you know, 100 trillion, a billion, just extremely large numbers. And I point to three people and I say that we have enough fingers and toes to show the number. And the number is 52 folds to reach the sun. And then I start breaking it down for them. At fold 21, that Bible paper reaches 6 feet tall. At fold 29, that Bible paper reaches the top of the Empire State Building. And at fold 40, it reaches the sun. Or sorry, it reaches the moon. And at 52, it reaches the sun. And how I tie that back into it is I bring up our national debt. We owe $35 trillion in debt. And a trillion seconds is 31,800 years. So I could pay you $20 million since the time the Great Pyramids were built every single day for 4,000 years, and you would still only have $32 trillion to pay the $35 trillion of debt. And when you start using these numbers to show people, I think people start to understand what's going on and they realize how large this number is, because I myself have a really hard time seeing that number. And so I'd like to kind of go over just really quick to finish the panel as, you know, discussion. And I only see three options that the U.S. can get out of this situation that we're in with the debt. And this is how I bring it up to people. You can do a debt jubilee where debt is wiped off. You can have extreme inflation, so we just print our debt away. Or the government becomes really fiscally responsible, hardens the money, and stops all spending. And then we, you know, we're back on track. And I think we're all kind of in agreement that that first option or that third option is not going to happen. I don't see them becoming fiscally responsible. So it means they start over with debt or they print everything away and everything that's a hard asset, including Bitcoin, goes through the roof. And so I just kind of like to get the panel's last thoughts or discussions on that aspect of the situation we're in.
Hey, Coleman, I love the numbers you put together related to billions and trillions. You should make a graphic on that. It reminds me of this book that I found, you know, years and years ago. And it was called something like A Million Dots. And on every page, there was 1,000 dots, 999 of them were black dots. And then there was one red dot. And what blew my mind is, It took 1,000 pages to get to 1 million. And it really paints the picture of how large 1 million is. And then to expand that out, you would need 1,000 of those books to get to 1 billion. And then you've got to do 1,000 stacks of 1,000 of those books to get to 1 trillion. And that's still just a fraction of what the debt currently is today. So it is mind blowing.
Yeah. And especially when you put it in a way like that, where you have to visualize books and then multiplying it by that, it's really frightening. Wade, do you have your hand up, sir?
Sorry. For some reason, Twitter's been buggy lately with the hands up. Once you speak, oftentimes it'll automatically take it down and you won't take yours down because put yours down, you have to take it up. But you still see my hand up. I'm not sure what's going on with Twitter.
No, it could just be on my end. I know my Twitter's gets a little crazy. So unless anyone else has anything else they'd like to hit on that, I would just like to kind of finish the show that saying just keep working on people. Keep talking to people, show them the numbers, show them the way out. That was kind of the point of this show. And I really appreciate everybody who came on stage and everybody who listened and participated. This was, it was something that I hope that we can kind of point people in the right direction and get them going and opening up their mind. Again, I have the best luck with numbers because I'm a numbers guy. And I just think it's fun to throw out crazy statistics like that. But before we get any last comments from the panel on the stage, I definitely want to just give a quick shout out to our partners, Solus Satoshi, BitX Miners, decentralize that mining grid. Go make sure you go to solosatoshi.com and pick yours up today. Punchplate, I see you guys in the audience. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for being one of our partners. Make sure that you're backing up your seed phrases on a metal plate. Make sure that you have anything can happen. Fire, water damage on a metal plate, that's not going to happen. So make sure you go to coddle.co, pick up your punch plate. And Black Sheep Ammo, I'm going to say it every time, they were the ones that donated 6,000 rounds to our Nashville Bitcoin range. I didn't think it was going to be possible for them to do it, but they graciously donated that ammo. So make sure you check them out, blacksheepammo.com. And last but not least is Silent Faraday bags. So make sure EMP, solar flares, protect your hardware wallet, protect your computer, protect your cell phone, protect anything that's digital that you can throw inside there. Check them out at slnt.com/BTCVETS with an S, and you'll save 15% on your order and you can qualify for free shipping. So again, thank you so much for our partners. Did anyone else have any last comments or anything that they want to hit on?
I'll just say, because we're sitting in this sideways channel right now, it really is one of the best times to think about converting your IRAs into Bitcoin. And as Lisa was talking about, it literally could not be easier. It is follow the bouncing ball to do it. And just a quick correction on what she said about Unchained. You can actually hold two keys to your IRA. You are fully sovereign if you want to be. Of course, you can always have a collaborative security model, and you can have a key agent if you don't feel comfortable holding the majority quorum of the keys. But you do not have to, at least with Unchained. Just a quick correction. And obviously, there's no taxes. If you're already in your retirement accounts, you can sell out of whatever you want. I mean, definitely sell your bonds, but it's up to you if you want to sell equities or anything else and convert to Bitcoin, when you can get a lot more now at 58K than when we're at 100K in a few months. And if you're stuck in a traditional IRA, if you think taxes are going to be higher in the future, now's a great time to convert your traditional over to a Roth, because that will grow forever. And if and when you do take your Bitcoin out, you pay zero taxes, zero on a Roth IRA. So it's one of the best cheat codes out there, is to own Bitcoin in your retirement account.
Thank you for that. And thank you for clarifying that. Again, I don't have one. Again, just not at that stage where I'm able to contribute with our business. But thank you for making sure everyone knows that it's a very easy process. Mickey Koss, I saw you jump up on stage. Good morning, sir. Did you have anything you'd like to mention?
Mickey's making artisanal cocktails later, and he'll give you a shave for $70.
All right, that's awesome. All right, if no one else says anything else, again, I apologize for having to leave a little bit early today. But I want to thank everybody who came out here, contributed by just even just listening in the audience, having in the background so you don't have to hear those voices in your head. Everyone who came up on stage, everyone who left comments, it really means a lot to me. It really means a lot to the space. And I hope that this space was something that I made enough sense, and you could share it with your friends and you could share it with your family. And hopefully we can get them on the orange pill and get them at least started or interested into Bitcoin. So that's going to be a wrap for today. Again, make sure you follow us every Monday through Friday. Come in, tune, listen, 9 o'clock in the morning, Central Standard Time. Make sure you get on the mission. Again, it's a really simple mission. Do you want freedom or do you want enslavement? I'll see everybody tomorrow morning. Go out there today, crush it, talk a little bit about it, and don't shitcoin. It's really bad for you.